Hey guys, welcome to the Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. Just want to talk to you a little bit before we jump into this next episode. You heard me say it a million times. Please give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this free. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Make an amazing product. Even if you're not a rifle hunter, pick up one of their glassing pads. You will thank me for it later. And I'm happy to announce our partnership with Primos and Bushnell. I've been using the Primos Hyperdome single reed. It's a great cow call. And I used a Hyperdome mini to make calf sounds. And if you listen to my podcast with Joel Turner, you'll know how important it is to have that in your bag of tricks to be able to make calf sounds. Bushnell makes awesome trail cameras. And if you go back and you look at my blog back in 2013 and in 2015, I did independent tests on trail cameras and Bushnell came up out on top both times. This season, behind the scenes, I did another trail camera test on a few different brands and Bushnell rose to the top again in bang for the buck, quality, and overall usability. So we decided to partner up with them. And the great thing about that is I'm going to pass along a discount to you guys. You can save 15% if you go to their website and use promo code STL02. That's STL02. Save 15% on anything. Doesn't have to be the things that I use. We use their ground blinds, a couple of their elk calls, and we use the trophy cam. It's an excellent product. Go check them out. I also want to talk to you a little bit about, I know it seems early in the season, but if you don't already know, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know that I am an outfitter here in Arizona and I do run hunts in South Dakota. My busiest time of year is archery deer season here in Arizona. We take out just a handful of, I'm busy because I only take out a select few amount of clients. So if it's something you want to get in on, I have a couple slots left. And I'm telling you this now, early in the season, because people always scramble after they realize that they didn't get enough hunting in for the year or they didn't draw the tags that they want to get in on that hunt. Also, javelina season. The draw is going to be coming up in the next couple of months. I know it seems far away, but it's really not. October is not that far away. And if you want to get in on an excellent hunt, or if you've never been out west or to Arizona and you want to try something new during a time that there's nothing going on, what are you going to do in February? Twiddle your thumbs? Come out. We have amazing hunts. You could do it with a bow. You could do it with a rifle. You could do it with the muzzleloader. Just all around inexpensive, good time, good way to spend the last few months of winter and come out and experience nice weather on a super fun hunt. Get in contact with me. We fill up quick. I take anywhere between 12 to 16 hunters a year on that hunt and the camps fill up really quick. So give us a call. Check out daysinthewild.com. Send me a message. Any way you want to get in contact with me, social media, we'd like to put together a hunt for you. So without further ado, let's jump into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast. Today we are talking mule deer and I have Skylar Richards with us on the line and we're going to pick his brain a little bit and see how he approaches his deer hunting. What's going on, man?
Not much. Thanks for having me. Excited to hop on the podcast with you and talk about deer. So,
yeah, for sure, man. I've been following you for some time. You kill a lot of big shit. So does your wife.
Yep. She kills more than me. Usually, yeah. So.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself and what you do?
Okay, so I am a full-time hunting guide down here in southern Utah. a guide with an outfitter called Color Country Outfitters. And yeah, I've been doing that for, let's see, I think going on 9 years this year. So I've been doing that. And then in the, when I'm not guiding, me and my wife, Nicole, are hunting for ourselves whenever we can, just weekends or in between, whenever our schedule allows. So we're pretty crazy about hunting mule deer specifically, but we do chase everything that we can just if we get the opportunity. So, but yeah, I've been doing that for about 9 years now and love it. And pretty spoiled down here in Southern Utah. We get to chase some really big deer. So it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. Yeah.
So, just out of curiosity and some selfishness, because I put in for Utah often, and I have quite a bit of points for the limited entry, so I'm going to start putting in for some decent hunts here in the next couple of years. What units are you guiding, or what zones are you guiding?
So I do a lot of guiding. I'm sure you've heard about the Ponsonot unit.
Yeah.
It's pretty famous. Yeah, so we do a lot of guiding on both public and private land on the Ponsonot, and then also what's called the Alton CWMU, which is it lies within the Ponsonot unit, but it's a separate unit itself. So, and then we do some general season stuff as well, but it's most of that's on private leases and stuff like that. But yeah, Ponsonot and the Alton CWMU are the two main ones that I get to guide on. So
the CWMU is, that's, you have to buy that tag, right? You can't draw that tag.
No, you can draw it, but I believe it's only open for residents.
Oh, it is. Okay. As a draw.
I believe so. As a draw. So the way it's a little system that Utah has set up, it stands for Controlled Wildlife Management Unit.
Right.
But you get the amount of tags based on how many deer and how many acres. But if so, say they give you 20 tags, the state requires you to allow at least 5 of those to be drawn in the public draw. So,
got it.
And how that works, but it's not an easy one to draw.
I hunted on one of those by Emory.
Okay.
About 14 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. And I bought the tag.
Yep.
It was actually a buddy of mine who owns it, owned the land. So, I mean, I picked it up for a bucket of balls and a, you know, roll of tape. But,
yeah,
it was pretty cool. Like, I mean, that was my, actually, it was only my second time. It was the second time hunting private land for mule deer. And it's, you know. It's a big difference.
It's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah.
You know?
It is nice.
You know, and I've been doing that quite a bit the last three years, because I got land up in South Dakota that I lease. I run some hunts. So now that I've gotten that, like, you know, the taste of that, it's like, you know, public what? You know?
Oh, yeah, but, for sure. Right? Yeah, I have to make sure I flip the switch mentally every time I go on my own hunt, you know, because I'm...
Yep.
Yeah, I get lucky enough to guide a lot on that private, but I haven't been able to hunt much on private yet, but when I do, I'm all over it for sure.
Yeah. You know? It's different, man. It's a different experience.
It is, for sure.
It's, you know, I mean, the deer themselves aren't any... It's just all the other factors make it that much better. But anyway, so how do you approach your season, like, you know, scheduling wise? And I mean, since you're guiding most of the time, I guess that's going to kind of affect how you plan for your own hunts. But what are you trying to do for your own specific hunting?
Yeah, I try to focus on deer mainly, mule deer, you know, but, this is the first year I'm actually going to take a week or two off of my guiding schedule. I've never done that before. But what we typically do is we just kind of find holes in our schedule, you know, and basically become weekend warriors in my off time, because I usually get about 2.5-3 days off at the end of the week, you know, if things go well. And then I also have 2 weeks off in the middle of October every year. So we really try to focus around that. So we basically just kind of, we apply for a lot of states. We just kind of, some states I'm building points and others I'm just trying to hunt as much as I can, you know. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of break it down state to state and find season dates that work for us. And then we go cycle through units, you know, try to find stuff that looks good statistically, you know, like buck to doe ratios, harvest success, public land, that type of thing. And then we kind of just narrow it down from there and try to figure out our draw odds, you know. And I don't know, it's quite the process for sure.
And it's its own hobby.
Yeah, for sure. So. Yeah, like this year, for example, we both drew antelope tags in Wyoming, and Nicole drew a mule deer tag in Wyoming. So we'll be there for that whole two week section in October when I have time off. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Cool. I've been to Wyoming a bunch of times. I actually used to go every year, but I'd always go the last couple of days of August and the first few days, like the first week of September during mm-hmm. the archery seasons. And I have went once in October, and I was like, what, completely different. Like after the rifle hunters have been through there.
Oh, like, yeah. Yeah.
It's completely different. Cause I was like, oh, how, this is going to be so easy, you know, with a rifle. And then mm-hmm. I went back and like to find a deer or to find an antelope was the landscape changed quite a bit, you know,
like, yeah,
all these places sure. where I seen tons and tons of animals and, you know, wishing I had a rifle in my hand. Cause you know, it's wide open, yep. But yeah,
no, yeah, like Wyoming.
So, when you're choosing a place to hunt, you know, what are some of the things that you're looking for? Like, what are some of your preliminary, I'm going to call it cyber scouting, or your preliminary scouting before you actually have boots on the ground? What are some of the things you're looking for in an area?
Yeah. So are you talking like the terrain or just overall, just everything?
Overall. Yeah. Terrain, feed, you know, water, whatever you think yep. it is that, you know, when you see it or you're like, oh, I'm going to go find deer here for sure.
Yeah.
There's going to be yeah. big bucks in this basin or there's, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, we're kind of the type of people that we can hunt a unit where you don't see deer every day. But if we have the preference, you know, I like to hunt somewhere that has a good, healthy amount of deer, you know, just so you can kind of pick through them and you feel your odds are a little better of stumbling into something. But as far as like terrain goes, I really like stuff like features that kind of, you know, it has pockets of timber, but it also opens up to where it's more glassable. Because we've hunted units before where it's just nothing but thick and flat, and those are really tough, you know. So I like to look for like open features where, you know, there's going to be nice feed and, you know, a river in the bottom, or like these basins, make sure that they have cover nearby for the deer to get into, you know, just basically just feed, water, and somewhere safe for them to go. But I personally love to get boots on the ground, you know, because you can only do so much on the Google Earth and all that. So what we'll do is once we decide we're going to hunt a unit, we always like to try to do a scouting trip if we can. And beforehand, we'll go through it and kind of pick all of our favorite areas that we want to check and we want to glass, and we'll mark, you know, like we need to get onto this glassing point, you know. And so we'll mark glassing points that we want to set up on, and, you know, for a morning, evening glass. And we'll also mark like the access. Okay, can you drive to it, or do we need to hike a trail to it? You know, we try to get all of that locked down so we're as prepared as possible, so we don't just show up and kind of hit panic mode like you can sometimes in a new area, you know. So
right.
But yeah, we really love units that you're able to effectively glass, you know. Try to stay away from some of those units that are really thick. Not saying that they're not huntable, but it's just a little out of our our comfort zone a little bit, you know. So
you got, if you like the glass, that doesn't lend itself to glassing, so it's not, you know, the tactic that you like to use. You're gonna have to use different tactics, so it's gonna be for sure. I get it.
For sure. Hopefully I answered that one all right, but yeah.
If
the more glass, the better for us.
Yeah, for sure. I see you guys always taking, you know, big velvet bucks and stuff like that. But what season would you prefer to hunt if you had your, you know, if you had your choice, you know, what time of year would you be hunting if you could go hunt?
Yeah, that's a hard one for me. What I'd love, I might give you two answers.
All right.
Early season, like end of August, the first 2 weeks of September. And then the middle of November, or just anywhere during the mule deer rut, you know. But what I really love about the early season is if you get in there, you find some bucks, you know, on your scouting trips, they're most likely going to be there end of August, first 2 weeks of September, be at least in the same general area. So they're a lot more predictable, a lot more, you know, usually more visual because they're out really packing on the feed and they're just out in the open country more, you know, that time of year, and they're just more patternable, and you get to see some beautiful places that time of year too. It's just all green, and I don't know, that early season's pretty tough to beat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, that might be my favorite, but at the same time, it is hard to beat a big old rutted up buck chasing a doe in the snow as well. You know, but that one's more predictable. You're kind of just covering areas, you know, covering does, waiting and hoping for a big buck to move in. So it's a little more out of your control in there, but it's kind of the what if factor that makes it more exciting as well. Like a giant could turn up around any corner, you know, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I could actually pick one, but.
Well, no,
my two favorite times of the year to hunt for sure.
So you mentioned, you know, picking some waypoints and stuff like that, you know, so that you weren't going crazy, you know, in panic mode or whatever. You know, what are those things that you're looking for exactly? What when you see a spot that is going to make a good glassing point or whatever, what is it? I mean, it might seem like a no-brainer to you, but describe to us what it is that you're looking for on you know, the topo maps and the aerials and stuff like that to find those spots.
Yeah, so I just like to be able to, you know, after you pick your area, so what we're looking for is just a glassing point where you can see the most amount of country possible. And sometimes that's a glassing point. Sometimes that's down on the highway. So, you know, I just like to be able to just really get a feel for the unit and really just get to a spot where you can see the most country you possibly can. But when we're picking a specific glassing point, like we'll, you know, take a high country hunt, for example, we'll pick basins and open chutes and stuff like that. Obviously, you want to be on a point where you can see open country because it doesn't really do you much good to glass the thick timber. You may catch something in pockets and stuff like that, but we like to be able to see where deer are going to want to naturally come out and feed on open hillsides or on the edge of the timberline, above timberline, things like that. So we just try to get somewhere where we can see the most amount of country possible and kind of go from there. So.
Okay. Oh, so you mentioned, you know, above timberline and, you know, the breaks basically between. Where do you feel in your experience that you find the larger bucks in that early, you know, early or late August, early September type hunt? And how does that differ from the medium bucks?
Oh, yeah, so, I don't know, that's, trying to think here. I mean, a lot of the larger bucks, you know, they have some age on them most of the time, unless they just have some crazy genetics or something. But usually these older, mature bucks, you know, they've figured out how to survive and get away. And a lot of the times they're not always necessarily clear off the beaten path, but sometimes, you know, just around that little corner that you can't really see from anywhere else, or they just find these little hidey holes. And it takes some luck to find them for sure, but you just kind of eliminate pockets, eliminate groups of bucks. You know, a lot of the times, that's one nice thing about this early, you know, the earlier season is the bucks are grouped up in these big bachelor groups, and you can really sift through them and get to see a lot of bucks, you know.
Do you find that those big, really big, mature, older bucks still hang out in those big bachelor groups, or are they typically in a smaller, you know, group of one or two, or even by themselves?
We've seen both. It kind of seems like the older mature bucks kind of like to stay with, you know, the mid-age to older type bucks. And a lot of the time in our experience, they've been in smaller groups. You know, it's pretty rare, at least on our own hunts here on the Ponsagon, we get groups of 20, 30 bucks altogether. But like, and a lot of the stuff we've hunted and seen ourselves, it seems like the older bucks kind of separate themselves a little bit. Typically they're with at least one or two other bucks from what we've seen. We have seen big bucks alone as well, but I would agree with that. I do think they, you know, they don't like to be in these huge groups, and they tend to be with more mature animals themselves. You know, it's like, I don't know what it is, but it's like a certain age class. You're like, all right, you can move up into the higher group now, you know, and they kind of
hang
together. They just, it's just a group that has it figured out, you know? So
yeah,
I have noticed that for sure.
And I don't know if it's because that's, they grew up together, you know, and that's like, okay, now they're all kind of around the same, you know, that's, you know, like your friend group. But
yep,
conversely, like, I don't know, I noticed, and if you've seen otherwise, I'd like to hear, but I always notice, like, you know, those 140 to 160 bucks always tend to be together, and there's always like a spike or a forky with them, you know, more like a forky, and spikes usually tend to see them with does. But then once you start getting to that, you know, 70s and 80s and up, but most of the time I feel like they're kind of in a group of two or three, and there's, you know, they're all right around that same caliber.
Yeah, for sure. And it seems like if there is a 2 point or a 3 point with them, it's usually some old, you know, some old mature big 2 point just doesn't score, you know. For sure, I think those mature bucks, you know, they definitely like to hang together when possible. Not saying you won't get younger bucks mixed in here and there, but for the most part, I think it's just an age class thing, you know. But yeah, and like you said, I don't know if it's because they grew up together or if they just kind of find each other. But I've noticed the same.
Okay. Yeah, and in relationship to does, during that early season, what are you noticing, that there's a lot of does in the same areas, or are they completely separate of the does?
You know, we've seen it where there's does in like the same basin as stuff, but there's usually some distance between them. They're not usually really hanging out much. A lot of the times in that kind of stuff, we'll see does in the lower elevations. There are does up high, but like you said before, it's usually you got your does and they'll probably have some spikes and little 2 points with them. But for the most part, they're completely separate from the older mature bucks at that time of year.
I assume because you're guiding and stuff like that, you're targeting specific bucks. What are some of the things that you're doing to, obviously you kind of told us how you're locating them a little bit, but once you've located them, what are you doing to keep tabs on them and then ultimately get them killed with your clients?
Yeah. So like we kind of touched on earlier, we're pretty lucky. A lot of the land that we get to hunt is private. And so once we find them, you know, we just kind of keep up on them, you know, keep checking up on them until with trail cameras, glassing, and try to watch them grow, kind of figure out what they do. And a huge advantage guiding the same place for 8 or 9 years is you'll notice that these bucks, they basically do the same thing, you know? Like, so you know, like once you find him, you're like, okay, he's here. If we spook him, he's going to go down. He's most likely going to go here. You know, you just kind of learn the land and learn how they use it. And that's a huge advantage once you learn an area like that, because they're creatures of habit for sure. You know, like we have deer that we've watched for 4 or 5 years that you're like, okay, we're going to go look for this deer and he's probably going to be on the same ridge he was last year. And sure enough, you know, if it's a good night, you'll go start blasting and turn them up right where you saw them the year before. So they definitely, if they're not pressured too much, they'll get you some really good patterns to figure out.
Now, that being said, do you think that can be said for public land as well, like in a low pressured area, or do you not see that as often when you're hunting public?
Or do you not have- it can be. Yeah, I mean, I still believe that the deer want to go back to where they just naturally want to be there. You know, you'll have some deer that'll figure it out and they'll hide for a while, but a lot of the times they'll come back and you'll see them right where you saw them in the summer. You know, if it's a perfect day without pressure, even I've seen them, big mature bucks in the wide open on crazy busy days out in the field as well too. So, but they have their habits and they like to stick to it as long as nothing, you know, interrupts that process. I think they'll be doing that more so than not.
Cool.
In the earlier months anyways.
What are some of the behavioral things about mule deer that you've learned over the years that, you know, contribute to notching your tag? You know, what are some of the things that they do that, like, you know, you can capitalize on?
Yeah, so kind of what we were just talking about, you know, we've figured a lot of the times that if you put in the time, like, they come back, basically, you know. So if they get blown out of the country, but you've watched them all summer, you know, don't see him for 4 or 5 days, and you're like, oh, he's gone for sure, then boom, the next day there he is. You know, they like to come back, basically. So just basically staying persistent, consistent, doing what you know best, and just having faith that they'll come back, you know. But they definitely like to come back. And one thing that mule deer are famous for, which a lot of people know, is, you know, they also like to look back, you know, take one last look before they go over the ridge. And that look gets a lot of those deer killed for sure. But that's one thing that's helped us the most, just preseason scouting, just knowing what the deer want to do, where they want to be, and just staying consistent, just knowing that you'll get your opportunity if you put in the time and you're looking in the right spot. Basically, yeah.
Cool. So try to paint me a picture. Describe to me what, when you see a deer doing this or a deer in a spot like this, you know you got his number. He's dead. Like, you're going to get him killed as long as you don't screw up the shot.
What? Yeah. So there definitely are those spots, and they're kind of hard to explain. You know, that deer comes out, the deer you've been hunting, and you're like, oh yeah, we got him. This is our chance right here, you know. And a lot of that has to do with when he comes out, you know. I really love to use just natural cover. You know, just know where the deer is. As soon as I find a deer that we want to go after, first thing I'll do is I'll check the wind, make sure it's good. And then the first thing I look for is, where can I get to where he can't see? You know, just eliminate one of his senses. If he can't see me coming, then, and he can't smell me. So if we got a ridge in between us, you know, I'll take a risk. I'll lose all visual of the deer personally, and just know that I have to get to this point, or I need to get to this saddle, or wherever I know I'm predetermined, you know. Like, okay, I can use this ridge to hide me, and the wind's going this way, so we're good. So if I get to this point, I'll be 200 yards or something like that. So I just really like to use the land, you know, if that makes sense. But yeah, there are those spots where you see them and you just they're just in a perfect spot. And then the opposite, you know, if you're like, well, that's a little risky going that way. If that situation comes up, a lot of the time, we just won't even attempt anything until he's in the right spot.
Right. So you're saying just be patient and wait for them to be in the right area.
Yeah.
You know, instead of just trying to stalk no matter what.
Yep, for sure.
That makes sense.
Yeah, especially on public land and, you know, just taking the chance of blowing them out of the country for another week. You know, you really want to pick those opportunities and make the most of them. And sometimes you don't have that luxury to be that patient because, you know, there's other hunters everywhere and you just have to try to make something happen. But if you can, that's definitely the route to go.
Yeah.
But that for me, putting together the stock in my mind and, you know, seeing where the deer comes out, just knowing he's in a perfect spot, that's my favorite part of the whole experience is, you know, when a stock comes together and everything worked out as planned and just kind of visualizing it and making that plan. And that's my favorite part. So
yeah,
pretty awesome.
Sure. What, I don't know, maybe you have a preference or maybe you have historically had better success one way or another, but do you feel like you'd rather find deer in the morning or find deer in the afternoon or midday, or like, when do you feel like if you see deer, you have a better chance of getting them killed?
It kind of depends on the area you're hunting, you know, and there's so many things that go into it. It's just, we've had success in both, you know, but we have some areas that we hunt, for example, like a deer will just show himself at first light and then seconds later he's back in the dark timber for the rest of the day. Then you're just hoping he comes out in the evening. So I don't know, it's kind of hard to pick one, but like if you're hunting, let's say for example, if you're hunting an area with thick timber that they like to come out into these openings to feed, I would probably pick evening time personally. But versus like the high country and stuff where they glass in a visible spot, if you can actually find them in the morning and then bed them down and then make your plan and go from there, I probably prefer mornings in that type of situation. So,
yeah. Do you prefer to stalk deer in their beds or would you prefer them up feeding or chasing a doe?
Yeah. I like it a lot when they're feeding real heavy. You know, that's my two biggest bucks. I've put the stock on and killed them while they were feeding. But we've had success stalking them in their beds as well. But usually if they're in a big group, you know, you got all the, that's what they're just looking out for. So if you can get them, a perfect situation is a deer out feeding in the open or somewhat open, you know where he is. There's a little bit of wind to where it's covering up your noise and all he's focused on is feeding. That's what I prefer, you know, just catch him out in the open like that. So,
yeah, I've killed a couple in their beds, but most of the time, mm-hmm. They're up feeding. Actually, most of my bigger bucks are all been during the rut. So most of them might have been chasing does and, you know, kind of focused on it, something else other than me. But
yeah.
I prefer feeding. One, I feel like it's easier to relocate them when they're up on their feet. And two, they're making their own noise, chewing and whatever. And they got their heads down. And I just seemingly less aware of what's going on because they're multitasking.
Yeah, exactly.
When they're in their bed, they're like, you know, that's all they're doing is looking out for danger.
Yep. Them or their buddy system, you know, they got people on watch.
They got the freaking
out.
The sentries.
Yep. Yep. If you have something distracting them, whether it's feeding or a doe, that always ups your odds for success.
Yeah. I mean, I know, of course, if you're hunting by yourself and you don't have somebody to keep tabs on them or whatever, or you're not being radioed in, gives you a better opportunity to get to them while they're still in the same spot. You know, obviously if they're up feeding, they can move quite a bit. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I get that too, but, and I've had success both ways, but let's like actually getting them killed. It's funny. Like, I feel like I've gotten in closer and had more opportunity maybe with them bedded. Mm-hmm. But the likelihood of me killing them seems to go down. But for me personally, yeah. Maybe because I'm not as patient.
Like there's a lot that can go wrong.
Yeah. So if you could share with us a couple of your favorite hunting stories.
All right. Let's see. Trying to pick which ones. I'll start with my biggest muzzleloader buck, because I learned a lot on this particular stock, and I was still pretty, you know, I'd been guiding for a few years, but as far as doing my own out of state and public land hunts, I had minimal time, but it came to a point where I just made it a priority to where I'm going to hunt every day that I possibly can, you know. But anyways, so this was just a general season public land hunt in Utah on the muzzleloader season. And I don't know if you've ever hunted a general season hunt in Utah, but it's like everywhere else. It's just basically a war zone in certain areas.
I've hunted a manti 3 years in a row during a general archery.
So you've seen you've seen it all then. You've hunted that.
Yeah.
The highways of ATVs on Skyline Drive and all that good stuff.
Oh yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And guys coming to sit right next to your glass, right next to you without even saying hello.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
But anyways, we had two of our favorite bucks picked out from the summer scouting. And so my wife Nicole, she hunts every day she can when, you know, while I'm out guiding, she'll be out hunting. And she hunted the whole archery season. And this buck that I ended up killing, she had only seen him, I believe it was two times. He was just a really old buck that just didn't like to show himself much, you know. And finally, I got a few days off at the end of the muzzleloader hunt. And we're like, what the heck, let's go look for him. We just kept looking for him, you know. And the first day I was able to hunt with her, and she had been there the whole hunt. We sit down and 10 minutes into the glass, we look and it, like literally standing in the exact same spot we found him for the first time that summer was the buck that we wanted to go after. And he's just a really deep forked, tall, typical. And I was like, holy, it kind of caught us off guard because in the back of your mind, you know, you get a little bit discouraged, like whatever, he's gone, you know, we'll never see him again. And then boom, there he is. And it's like, it's go time. So me, I kind of made a big, big mistake right off the bat. I had a perfect stock planned and I just bailed off the mallard and went for it. And I just went as hard as I could, but as quiet as I could at the same time without getting busted. But I didn't take any of my layers off, and it was really cold in the morning, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just like a walking furnace at this point, you know. And I get, in the meantime, this is just general season Utah for you. I jump up a deer that's packing a leg, and he goes up over the ridge away from me, and all of a sudden bullets are flying, you know. I just put my head down and keep going, you know. And I get to where I want to be, and there's the buck just sitting there. He's about to feed up over a saddle, but he's only like, I think he was only 200 yards away, and I have a muzzleloader. You can have scopes on him in Utah. Mm-hmm. So it's a very doable shot, you know. So I lay down, pop out the bipod, get ready to find him in my scope, and it's just nothing but fog because all this heat's escaping from my jacket and through my neck. So I can't see through my scope. I pull my binos up to make sure it's him. I can't even tell if it's him. I can just tell it's a deer. I'm just losing my mind, right? And then this deer goes over the top, and I'm like, oh, he's out of my life forever, you know. And finally, I was like, whatever. So I stripped a bunch of layers off, threw them in my pack, and we knew where this deer would go to get back into the timber where he would bed. And I knew if I hurried, I could get across from that on a little point. So that's what I did. You know, I basically just, as fast as I could go, got up. And right as I crested the top, I could see him heading up the other side. And at this point, there's bullets, just shots everywhere. Not at this deer, but around me. You know, it's just chaos. And I was lucky enough, I laid down. He went behind a tree. I got laid down and set up and had my crosshairs. I could see his nose and the tips of his main beams. And I just sat there and waited, and about, which is a good thing. He took about 3 minutes to come out and let me calm down, you know.
Right.
Took a few steps out and I touched one off, and the rest is history. But I definitely learned a lot in that experience. One of the best days of hunting I've had, for sure. But
yeah.
I mean, the excitement of hunting public land, it's, you get to deal with a lot of things out there on public land, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now before every stock I do, if it's hot at all, I'm taking some layers off for sure.
Yeah.
Because that about cost me a buck.
Even if it's not hot, man, like even if it's like the coldest freaking morning ever. You know, so I deal with that a lot here. I'm sure you do too in southern Utah, but you know, here in Arizona, so I hunt in January. It could be in single digits in the morning.
Yep.
And it heats up. So I'm used to wearing layers. But when I hike into a spot, even if it's just on my glassing point, I take everything off. I'd rather freeze a little bit for the first few minutes, but I know my body's going to generate enough heat. And once I get to my, you know, my glassing point, I'll sit there for a few minutes and I'll still feel warm. And as I start to feel like I'm getting cold, that's when I start adding the layers back on. And then if I go on a stalk, I shed everything. It's like, you know, it's a game I play on and off, you know. But I know back in the day when I didn't do that, like, man, I suffered a couple times where I was like soaking wet with sweat. And then I like shivering like crazy because I had to stay in one spot. Another thing I learned too, like this was a few years back on the December coos deer hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left all my stuff back where my cousin was glassing. And I said, okay, I'm just going to drop everything here and I'm going to go after this buck. Well, I got over there and I got to a spot where I wanted to make the shot. It was a rifle hunt and I couldn't make the shot because of his body position was being all covered up by this yucca.
Yep.
And I just sat there and I sat there and I started to freeze my ass off. So, so now when I take stuff off, I always make sure I put it in my backpack so that if I get to a spot and I have to wait a long time, wait a deer out or whatever, I can still put it back on. And also, you know, for what we talked about earlier. But yeah, I've done that same thing where steam's just coming off your body. You can't see shit out your binos or anything. Yeah, that's a bad situation, you know?
Yeah, in that moment, I was like, what am I doing? You know, I felt like I'd never hunted a single day in my life. And yeah, it was bad. It was, yeah, but learned from it for sure.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. But we've also had that other experience you were just talking about, not taking enough clothes with you. You know, me and Nicole sit up on we watched this big buck in Colorado chase a group of does into a patch of trees, and we're like, well, he's gonna come out, we'll just wait here all day. And it really wasn't that cold at that moment, but then the wind started blowing, you know, and it was bad. It got really cold. We had our coats with us, but we were dumb enough that we had them underneath the butt of our gun so we could be laying down ready to shoot if he came out at any minute, you know. And anyways, Nicole ended up getting like a minor mild case of hypothermia. We had to go back to the hotel. We had a wall tent set up, but she just, it was like an hour long drive back to the tent, and she was just shaking the whole time with the heater on blast. Like, I was about to die of a heat stroke in the truck, you know, and she's just over there shivering. So I was like, what the heck's going on? So we went and got a hotel, and yeah, she like passed out at the front counter. It was weird. It was crazy, but it's a good thing we got the room that night. But if you're not careful, you know, you get caught up in the moment and don't really realize what's going on around you. having those layers with you at all times is something you need to always do, for sure.
For sure. Well, cool, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us and sharing that story with us. It was a fun, interesting podcast, and maybe I'll have to have Nicole on and come share some stories with us too. I'm sure she's got a couple.
Sure. Yeah, she does.
So.
Yeah, cool. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
All right, bud. Well, thank you, and enjoy this season. Hopefully it doesn't get too messed up for you guys with all this Corona shit going on. And
yeah, seriously.
So, all right.
Yeah, we'll hopefully talk to you. Not. Okay, we'll talk to you later.